Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. We seem to have all of these talks these days. We're talking about consciousness, awareness. What is everything going on in the spiritualism movement? Or are we just saying, I'm in a funk, I don't know how to get out of it, I need a coach, I need an excavator, man, I just need a hole to drop into, and that's the end of my story. So many times people these days are saying, there's so much going on, there's a lot of existential kind of talk, there's the regular standard old way of doing things, there are different ways that I could potentially live my life, but boy, I don't know. Everybody's got rocks out there and ways to build your bridge, but they just don't seem to help me move through things as I'm supposed to be able to shift my thoughts, change my ideas, the way I'm living my life, and be able to see, is there something else in this world? I think sometimes we end up saying when we get to the end of life, we're always craving, what are we trying to get to? We don't want to die. We want to stay living longer. We want to anti-age everything so we can have this full experience. Many times people at end of life say they fear death. Maybe what they're wondering is, I have this hole in me. I've been just trying to fill it up. Does anyone know how to fill it up? What we'll be talking about today are all of these topics and how they fit together with a wonderful, delightful book by Dr. John Chuback. It is Make Your Own Damn Cheese, Understanding, Navigating, and Mastering the Three Mazes of Success. Dr. John, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Dr. John, don't you think there's so much talk, you could almost sit inside of a restaurant and you could pick out which different types that people are having because you hear these keywords bing in your head and you say, ooh, that's drawing me in. Yes?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that people are, in general, becoming thankfully, more introspective and are in search of awareness.
Yeah, don't you think that sometimes people will say, what is awareness? Some have no clue, and some don't even want to join in the conversation. Don't you think there's all different levels? But just as much as we say there are leaves on the tree, that is all what creates the tree, right?
Absolutely. You know, this is fascinating that you're bringing this up, and I'm a great believer in this kind of universal energy where people get on a similar frequency or wavelengths and communicate well. What I mean is, just this morning I was studying some material on awareness, and I was teaching some of that same material to my staff here at my practice in New Jersey. This subject of awareness to me is like waking up from a very, very deep sleep. Some of us are almost comatose, almost anesthetized by the environment that we've grown up in and the people we've grown up around and the messaging that we have absorbed over many, many years. And I talk about this in the book, which then ultimately takes seat in the subconscious mind and builds a paradigm for us. And the paradigm becomes one of somnolence, of sleep, deep, deep sleep. And in awareness, what I find so fascinating is that what we're doing is we're waking up. But what's so interesting to me is I believe that we're waking up to another level of sleep. You're in a lighter state of sleep, like someone coming out of general anesthesia after an operation. You're not fully awake. It's not nirvana. It's not, you know, complete and total awareness, but it's a higher stage, as you mentioned, Dr. Jeanette. It's stages and levels. So at each level of our life, as we study and we become more aware, we come out of this deep fog, out of this deep anesthetic sleep that we were in. And to your question of what is awareness, I think what people should understand, it's my belief, when we talk about awareness, aware of what? Aware of ourselves. That's what awareness is. It's the journey of understanding who we are and becoming aware of our great potential, great power, and our greatness.
Right. You know, I almost see awareness, and I've shared it on the show before, is almost like a decloaking. It's you have been cloaked, I think, you know, since, you know, the early 1900s, people have cloaked on us. They have given us that we can't fulfill this in our life, so we cloak onto our children our ideas, our thoughts, our paradigms, our habits, and all of the energy that we wish for them going forward, and we hope that they can carry that forward then to their children. It's almost like the 1900s, we became weighted down by more and more of this, labels, what you had to be, success, a lines, a lineage, how many letters behind your name, you know, kind of idea to, quote, reach a pinnacle. And I think what is happening in the 2000s, you know, 2000s, whatever, but what we're having now is that we're having a decloak. We see people doing detoxes, you know, detox your body, declutter your home, clear out your mind. We're now saying that we're rebirthing, we're changing, we're moving through, and we're shedding so much. We see shedding going on everywhere where people are whack, 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 talking about subjects, and we're going, psh, I'm out of here. I'm not even engaging in that anymore. So we're finding that we're finally learning how to release that. And when we release that, what happens then is your soul and your spirit come up. In other words, the more things you can keep throwing away and letting go and moving past, you're almost like face to the sun kind of idea. Yes?
Absolutely. You've said things so beautifully there, and I'm resonating with so much of what you're sharing with your listeners. This idea of cloaking, I think that's beautifully done. And what I've thought of and have discussed with other teachers and mentors of my own is, in modern parlance, you can think of it as a virus, not in the sense of a medical virus that causes physical illness, but computer code virus that written into our programming through this culture and society and complicated world that we live in with all of this quote-unquote baggage that can be, as you pointed out, generational, even within families and so forth, but it's within cultures, it's within all kinds of things. You've been victimized, your computer has been victimized with all kinds of corrupt code, which you then buy as being real, as being authentic, as being true. And through study and through this study of personal development and self-awareness, you're going in as an antiviral software package, and you're eliminating all of that garbage, all of that junk, and you're throwing that in the trash bin and clearing it out so that, as you said, the spirit and soul, I believe the terminology said your spirit and soul can come forth. And I believe that. The one caveat I would say, which I think it's a nuance, but I think it's an important one. I like to say that we don't have a soul. We are a soul.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I believe that we are spiritual beings living in a physical body, in possession of an intellect, and interacting in the material world. But at the core, at the essence, I am the spiritual being. I am the soul. I have a mind. I have a body. I have an intellect. And when you can strip yourself, as you say, decloak, which is such a fabulous terminology. I haven't heard that put that way before. Decloak, or as I say, clean out the hard drive and eliminate all of this viral code that you've been infected with and functions as a disability. When you can clear that away, then the true essence of who you are, which is that spiritual being, can shine and come forward.
And I think it's really important to be able to say at this time, when people are struggling and having issues with the terms, the concepts, their life, things that are going on for them, what we're saying is not just push the button and everything's hunky-dory, but also to give yourself a break. Because so many times people say, can't get it, I don't understand it. In other words, is the bus going to leave the terminal without me? And here comes the tsunami, you know? And I think the idea is give yourself a break, because these concepts of this time in which we're in today, 2019, have been noticed in reflection of the past. In other words, if you have a disease and you are in pain and you have to have something done, or things are just off kilter or in misalignment or whatever it might be, whatever label you'd like to put on it, you are in that process in that moment, and that is exactly what you are. You're in that moment. And we're not asking you to turn around and say, well, everything is great, it has a purpose, it's not going to be good, all of a sudden I don't have my pain. Well, okay. You can work with that. However, being in that pain and in that moment might be just what you need, and later on reflect on it. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes people say they subjugate the moment of where they are, because they're always in this other place or this other space, and they want to be always over there. It's almost like negating part of the self in a way, yes?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned something about reaching the pinnacle. And so, you know, I think goal setting is very important. But I want to be clear about it. I think I have a particular philosophy, which is, you know, I've set and achieved a lot of goals in my life. But what I tell my friends and my staff and, you know, people that I speak with publicly is that the real goal is the path, you see, and that takes away a lot of that pressure that you're talking about. That gives you a break all the time to think, well, if I haven't achieved X that I'm shooting for, that's fine. As long as I see that I am on my way to X. I define success, it's not my definition, but I love this definition. Earl Nightingale, I believe, is the first to say this. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal. So if you have something that you want to achieve, whether it's an academic goal, whether it's a financial goal, whether it's a fitness goal, whether it's a personal relationship goal, you can't expect, for example, take my example. My background is that I'm an open-heart surgeon, a board-certified cardiovascular surgeon. When I made the decision to do that at age 18, entering college, or age 19, that required 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 5 years of general surgery training, and 2 years of cardiovascular surgery training, at the minimum, if that everything went smoothly, which in my case it did, but other people get master's degrees, they do research in the lab. But the minimum was, for a 19-year-old, 15 years of academic training to become a cardiac surgeon. So what I did was I got on the path. And I was discussing this with my staff this morning. We had a staff meeting this morning. When I finished, when I achieved my goal and I became a cardiac surgeon in 2002 at the age of 33, I wasn't at the end, Dr. Jeanette. I was at the beginning.
Right.
You see? But I was still on the path. And so at any point, one can just take a breather, sit back and say, hey, you know what? I may not be where I'm going, but I'm on my way. And as long as I'm on my way, I'm winning, I'm succeeding, and, you know, I'm proud of myself.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
Also to the concept that your end result, in which you may have set out as your path, let's say you may say, I want this job, and this job will provide blank, blank, blank for me. And then you say, well, all of a sudden I didn't get that job. However, maybe the purpose of your path was to walk through knowing that you have a potential to be able to get that job or be able to feel something along the way. I know for myself, I was a dental hygienist and, you know, for many decades. And my purpose in reflection now, several decades later, I'm looking back and I'm saying, oh, my purpose for dental hygiene was not to clean teeth, be the best dental hygienist, rack up over 500,000 people you clean their teeth. It was for to look into their souls of all of those patients. That's it. Every patient I put back, I looked into their eyes and connected with their soul. Just as you do with your patients, you connect with their heart. The very same thing. So your purpose may not be, quote, always, quote, fixing hearts. It may be to engage the heart of each of your patients, of their energy, of their soul. And then from there, everything else is on the petal of the flower, so to speak. You know, I think sometimes we get stuck in the end result as something you can put something you can put down on a piece of paper, and we say that's the end of the result. Sometimes the end result is the feeling, the accomplishment of something deeper, much deeper, that we may not have even recognized, yes?
Absolutely. You know, one of my favorite quotes is attributed to Cervantes, the great novelist, who said, the journey is better than the inn, the inn, I-N-N. To
right.
Which to me means if you and I, Dr. Jeanette, we go on some unbelievable journey, an incredible epic escapade, and we have tremendous odds to overcome and obstacles and hardship, and there are times we don't have water, there are times it's cold, and so on and so forth. And now finally, I see it in my mind that we've climbed some sort of a rugged mountain, and at the top of this mountain there's this beautiful inn, and in the inn now we've bathed and we've dressed for dinner and we've come down to the dining room and there's a roaring fire and we both have a beautiful meal in front of us and maybe a glass of wine, and we're finally here. It's time to enjoy the dinner and the banquet and the warmth of this beautiful chateau that we've arrived at. But 99 times out of 100, when we sit down to eat, all we're going to want to talk about is how we got there. Say, so, Dr.
Right.
Jeanette, do you remember we were coming around that bend and the horse almost went over the side and I
mm-hmm.
grabbed your saddle? And mm-hmm. you're here. Now you're here. You've arrived. But we want to go back and recount how we got there. We want to talk about the journey, what it took to get to that place. And
right.
In my career, for example, I spent all those years training to become a cardiac surgeon, and the first 5 or 6 years I was in practice, I did only open heart surgery very, very successfully, but I found an emptiness. I was unhappy, and
right.
I changed. My practice now is an office-based practice. I'm still working in vascular disease, but focused on varicose vein disease, which is a very
mm-hmm.
important subject. But if you had told me 10 years before, when I was in the heart of the journey, that I would become ultimately a vein specialist, I wouldn't even know what you're talking about. But as we stay on the path takes all kinds of turns, and as long as we don't judge ourselves critically
mm-hmm.
all the time and question our decisions – then you just travel. You just travel the path. You don't have to worry about any particular signpost.
Right. You know, it's so interesting when you were talking. I could see like a Gerber daisy, and, you know, your degree was the middle of the flower. And for each petal, then you do surgery, you know, the heart or the veins, and then the, you know, it branches off for all of our different exploration of self, so to speak. Even you writing this book, Make Your Own Damn Cheese, is another one of those petals. I think that if we allow ourselves and we are in awareness, that is what it is all about, is about what is on your petal. What's the next adventure? Does the petal fall off? Do we go along the one that's maybe starting to turn a little brown on the end and still explore it? Do we turn around and say, oops, one's missing, let's just go to the next one? It's truly about being able to be open to whatever shows up for you and how to create that to show up for you. Don't you think that the idea sometimes we say, oh no, life is hard and I'm going to stay on the ladder, and it's sort of like, well, heck, I want to go find out how to make the ladder. I want to go find out how to cut down a tree. I want to learn how do you sand down wood. I want to learn how to plant trees. So really that's, I just took it around so many full circles of how you can look at your life, even if you think it's just, I'm climbing the ladder, right?
Right. Well, you know, one of my favorite analogies with regard to the ladder is, I don't think there's anything wrong with climbing a ladder, but one should be certain that the ladder is leaning against the right building before you start climbing. You know, don't climb a ladder and find yourself way up on this ladder of success and achievement and accomplishment and find that, you know, this isn't the ladder I wanted to be on in the first place. So be willing to change, be willing to climb multiple ladders. I love your metaphor with the flower, the complexity of the flower and the center and the petals and the leaves. It's so much more fulfilling, isn't it, than becoming a blade of grass?
Right.
I mean, a blade of grass is a beautiful living thing too, an organic thing, but a flower draws the attention of people. It has the admiration of cultures going back thousands of years, the beauty of the flower because of its delicacy, its complexity, its beauty, its color, its aroma, etc. And that's what we want to be. We want to be interesting, fully blossomed, fully bloomed individuals that are multifaceted, as you say, with lots of petals and lots of leaves. You know, when I left cardiac surgery, my father was a physician. He was an obstetrician gynecologist, and he was very proud that I'd become a cardiac surgeon. When I was changing career paths to go into venous disease, he was not, you know, a great champion of that idea. He was very much against it. He said, you know, spent all these years, you know, going to this, as you said, pinnacle, to the top of
right.
the medical profession and surgical discipline. Don't change. Don't go in a new direction. Don't do this. Don't do that. And my colleagues, my partner, you know, other referring physicians, my patients, it's what I call the crab mentality. You know, when there are a bunch of crabs in a bucket, they say that a fisherman doesn't have to cover that bucket of crabs, because as one crab tries to crawl out and get away and do what it wants to do, the other crabs simply grab him and pull him back down into the bottom. So it becomes this churning bucket of life. And we find this, that people don't want you to get out of the neighborhood. They don't want you to leave the state. You know, people say, we love you. You're safe here. Stay with us. We're all the same. We do this. We do that. You're part of the gang.
Right.
It's not always easy to grow like a flower. So it takes courage to be a flower. It takes courage to grow new petals, and it takes some courage, in a sense, to let, as you pointed out, Dr. Jeanette, so beautifully, some of these petals once in a while to dry up and fall off. That's the nature of things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes when we see our lives and we say, where are we going and how can we move through things, sometimes we tend to take an ego and start to create it and say, whew, I'm out of here. I'm away from all of that now, and I no longer engage in that. So I'm going, and you create almost like a spiritual ego, more or less, you know? And I think the idea is sometimes when you want to create from inside, you say, what is it truly all about and how can you feel it as you move through your day versus, hey, I'm waving the big flag and now you're looking for the next bucket to drop into. You know, I think we always want, as humans, so many times in the past, people would say, I want to stay in that bucket because everybody knows me. They know all my stuff. You know, I don't have to be open because we're all kind of good. We accept each other. Well, that's really about an investment program. I'm invested because everybody needs to be together to be able to have a product or a consumer or whatever it is. In other words, if everybody's in the neighborhood and you don't want someone to move out because Lord knows who would move in, right? So everybody's vested in the end product. But when you turn around and you step out of that, are you looking for another place to be vested in again? Or can you see how you can create your path and be on it for self? Yes?
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting point that you raise, the idea of if you leave the neighborhood or you leave the circle, the culture of thinking and behavior that people are worried who's going to move in. I think that that's a very interesting perspective. There is some of that. But I think equally, if not more importantly, what people are really worried about is you're improving and you're moving up and you're moving on and you're growing and I'm being left behind. And I don't have the courage to do that. And I don't have the will to do that or the ambition or the strength. And you in a sense, belittle me. My ego gets crushed when your ego gets expressed. So rather than say, hey, Dr. Jeanette, Dr. John, I want to go with you on this journey. I heard about that harrowing journey you guys took last time, and it sounded like you almost got killed. But you know what? I want to go on the next one if you'll take me along. Most people aren't like that, sadly. Mm-hmm. Most people say, you know what? I'm comfortable here. I feel safe here. This is what I know. You know, I'm not, you know, not doing so bad. Can't complain. That kind of language. And they settle. They settle for a life which in many ways, and I'm not standing in judgment of them, this is our own feelings about ourselves that I'm talking about.
Right.
It's a life of mediocrity. The life of mediocrity. And as you say, when you get to the end of the life, mm-hmm. okay, which everyone is going to come to the end of, you know, my personal belief system, to the end of this phase of the eternal spiritual journey, when we come to the end of this phase, people will oftentimes look back and say, I wish I had more courage. I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. It's rare that we have regrets of the things that we did and tried and achieved. It's mostly regrets of when fear held us back.
Right. You know, and I think sometimes, you know, you and I have both experienced this is with clients and patients at the end of life or at that time when they feel that the door is coming much closer to them. Sometimes people will say, I didn't do this, that, or the other, or I didn't have this, that, or the other. And I think that's really the key there is to share with them keys, to give them a set of keys in their hands and turn around and say, you know what? Tell me about your life. And I'll say, oh, I think that sounds like courage. I think that sounds like love. I think that sounds like a great adventure. I think it sounds like you really went to the dark side and wasn't that exciting and you explored that. I think we don't give ourselves credit for all the adventures that we've been on. It's just that we see it reframed as a human experience in how it plays out on social media, in the television, or in books. And we think that is what it's supposed to be cloaked as. And we turn around and we say, but ours didn't look like that. Well, heck, it's not supposed to look like that. It's supposed to be your own experience. And can you see that? Don't you think we just don't even notice sometimes of the adventures that we've done?
Absolutely. I think it's easy for us to discredit our own accomplishments. And what's even easier is to look at the other person. This is a fascinating part of human nature and the human psyche, mm-hmm. that we look at someone else and we say, well, sure, Dr. Jeanette could do this or Dr. John could do that, but that's right. Because X, Y, and Z, but I'm not that kind of person. I'm not that smart. I'm not that courageous. I'm not in a position to do it. I don't have the money. I come from this neighborhood. I come from this educational background, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's fascinating how we can easily picture almost anybody else achieving phenomenal things, but it's very difficult to put ourselves in that movie. And one of the things that you touched on about this end-of-life issue, you know, I have so many mentors, and I nod to each one of them or many of them in my book. One of my mentors, Bob Proctor, who's fortunately still with us, he's up in his 80s now, but he's a phenomenal, phenomenal energy source and still teaching and going strong and so forth. But he says two things which I really love and I remind myself of. He says, most people tiptoe their way through life, mm-hmm. hoping to make it safely to death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a statement. I mean, what a powerful statement. And you see it all over. And the other thing he says, that when they, at the end, at the funeral, when they bury the majority of people, it's a formality because they didn't really live. Not the way that they could have, not the way that they should have, and most importantly, not the way that they wanted to. It doesn't matter how I want the other person to live. It's how they want to live in their own heart, in their own mind, what really drives them, and are they really living the life that they see in their mind's eye? And most times the answer is no.
Well, Dr. John, don't you also think that light and dark is important for coexistence? A few dead flowers outside shows the cycle of life. People that are born and pass on, that shows another cycle. Don't you think sometimes that when people are having these struggles, we say, oh, well, they didn't, quote, get it, they didn't whatever. And it's always reflecting back on that. And when we do reflect back on that, that's really showing that we believe that someone should be somewhere else, should have attained, should have gone, should have accomplished, should have dot, dot, dot kind of idea. When in essence, in other words, we see homeless people and we believe that they need a home. We see people that are drinking too much and we want to help them stop. We see people who are overdosed and we want to quickly save them and rescue them and, you know, bring them back to the edge of life, you know, with Narcan and all this other stuff. And we say, well, that's what we need to do. Well, the answer is, do we really need to, quote, do that? Is not that at times a reflection for us to learn something about self, also learn something about ourselves going forward and helping others? But we can't always change the story for everyone. Someone might be there just for a purpose. In other words, I've worked with so many patients that have said, you know, well, my life has been a real train wreck. And I will say, thank you so much for showing me your train wreck. Thank you so much. I really didn't know anything about that, but I honor that story. In other words, honor every single moment of every single person's life, including our own, as purpose. In other words, sometimes we look at it, we say, you know, oh gosh, you know, they've been drinking their entire life. Their life was a total wreck, and, you know, they've been living on the street. We have to hurry up and give them a house. And we'll say, did you ever think that a homeless person living under a bridge was very happy? That was where their existence was. And they didn't believe that they needed indoor plumbing. They didn't believe that they needed to have a house and all this junk. Just as we're turning around and decluttering, hey, maybe they got the message. They don't need stuff. So you can honestly take it and totally flip each paradigm and say, everyone is here for this existence and everyone has created their own flower. And even if it's broken or dying or crashed, or if it's a black flower instead of a bright yellow pink flower to draw you in, isn't it all glorious in God's eyes, in Source's eyes, in something, in the whole picture, the whole realm of it? Yes?
Well, yes. I think that what you're touching on there very, very nicely is the idea, these are ancient philosophies of balance, the so-called yin and the yang, and and so on. In other words, if no one were ill, then no one needs to become a physician.
Right.
If no one was in a state of spiritual disarray, then we could eradicate all of the houses of worship and houses of God around the world, which would make some people, I think, very happy. But that wouldn't address all of those people who are seeking spiritual guidance, who are seeking spiritual healing. So we can't. In other words, if we eradicated unemployment, which in a sense is a wonderful goal, wouldn't the people working at the unemployment office be out of a job suddenly, and then unemployment would resurge
right.
by the thousands across the country? So every problem is being met in equal and opposite force.
Mm-hmm.
These are the forces
right.
of nature. These are laws. This is, you know, Newtonian physics, if you will. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You know, so there, for every day, there's a night. For every winter, there's a spring. For
right.
every person who's down on their luck, there's somebody who's doing well. So if we find the person under the bridge, I think it's humane and it is appropriate to reach out and say, can I help you? Do you want help? Are you looking for more? Are you looking for better? That person then has an opportunity to make a decision. Yes, I do, or no, I don't. And in 6 months, that person may be living better, worse, or the same. I had an old professor. He was a phenomenal thinker. He took such complicated ideas and he broke them into simple subjects. He said the most important question to ask in all of medicine is better, worse, or the same. And each of us has these moments. Today I'm a little better. Today I'm a little worse. Today I'm about the same. It doesn't have to be held up in judgment. There's so much judgment in everything.
Right.
But if you're having a bad day, then we got to fix that, as you said. No, why can't I have a bad day? Maybe tomorrow will be a great day. In the end, there'll be a steady baseline, an average that runs through all of that. And it goes not only as the individual, good days and bad days, as a species, mankind, good days and bad days, as a planet, good days and bad days, and as a universe, good days and bad days. And these are laws. You can't mess with this stuff. My old mentor, Jim Rohn, who's gone now, used to say, you can't mess with this stuff. You can't, you know, everybody can't become a priest. There'll be no one to come and worship. Everybody can't become a worshiper. There'll be no one to give the sermon.
Right. You know, I think also too, just as you share how we are able to expand our awareness in this world today, I think also too, you being as a surgeon, you wanted to learn about the heart. Well, that was the end result, was the heart. And then when now you're doing the veins, and it's just the path towards the heart. You know, for every patient I always look at and I see, I would say to them, they would say, oh, well, gosh, you know, you don't want to hear my story. You don't want me to come in and tell you that. And I'm like, when everybody that comes in is like, thank you so much for coming today. It's so exciting to have you here and engage in that energy so we can see where, you know, let's talk. Let's have a story today. I think sometimes people think that, I'm putting them off, or the doctor's too busy. They can't talk to me today. I don't want to burden them with that. I always say, engage with them. That's the place. That's where you are in the first place. So I think even when people come in, you know, with heart complications, when I was in, you know, open heart surgery myself, you know, for 2 years, when I was in there, what we were doing, hold on, I will never forget, a patient came in and she was in her 90s and she really needed to have a valve done. And the doctor says, oh, no, you're too old. You're at the end of life. You know, why are we going to spend all this money to give you 4 or 5 more years? She said she was so disappointed because she crawled up, you know, the mountain every day to pick strawberries. She had a strawberry farm. And I think the idea that can we celebrate each person for the moment they are and just being presented in front of you, irregardless of the position of where they are in life, or what they're carrying, or what color their cloak is, or what they speak from their words. These are really souls just presenting to us each day. And I think if we respect them as that, we can learn to respect self and in turn make the changes that need to come about to be able to move you through to the next phase or the next page or the next chapter of each of your books. Yes?
Yeah, I think that, as you say, life is like a book made up of chapters and pages and sentences and ideas. And I think one of my favorite words is the word better, because no matter where you are on the spectrum of life in terms of education, wealth, fitness, health, you can always get better if that's your desire. Now, I would hope, I tend to be an optimistic person, I would hope that people of, you know, all walks of life and at all stages of development, personal development, would like to get a little bit better, because then you're on the path and you're growing, and then you can share that with others. But the line of demarcation between the person who's the marathon runner and the person who is just getting the energy to take a walk around the block for the first time in 10 years.
Right.
It's grades. There's a thousand gradations between those two individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both doing something great. They're both trying to get better. The one individual is trying to take 2 seconds off their marathon time, and the other individual is trying to walk around the block for the first time without having to stop and catch their breath in 2 months of trying.
Right.
And that's the process. That's the path. And that's
right.
What I think is innate in human beings. There's this desire to improve, desire to grow, desire for self-expression, for self-expansion, for self-awareness. And that process, to me, is the most fascinating thing in the world.
Right. And that's absolutely what you talk about in your book. Again, Dr. John, the book is Make Your Own Damn Cheese. And I think, don't you think in closing, is that what you're really talking about is reducing some of the fear, having the courage, stand up, just open your eyes and your heart and be able to see what shows up for you, yes? And then allow yourself to pick up a pen, which is action, and be able to move through, yes?
Absolutely. I think the idea is that as a human being, you're the highest form of life that we know of in the universe, blessed with a magnificent supercomputer for a brain.
Right.
And your brain is something separate from your mind. And once you begin to understand what the mind is, which is what I go into in the book, and how the mind looks, I use a very classical description, diagrammatic description of how your mind looks in terms of the conscious, subconscious, and superconscious mind, and how that connects you to your body and to the world. Once you have control of that mechanism, then you can become the captain of your ship, and you can sail in any direction that you'd like to sail, and you can build a magnificent lifestyle that fits your personal desires, needs, wants, and wishes, rather than being like a boat at sea with no sail and no rudder and no motor that's simply drifting and hopes someday to wash up into some magnificent port. It's unlikely that it will happen that way. And hopefully the book gives people tools to navigate this complicated sea that we live in and get to where they personally wish to go.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. John, thank you so much for taking the journey today into be able to all these possibilities. I think sometimes people say, hear the words, I kind of get it, I don't really. What you and I shared today was our own journeys and how we were able to see and reflect it, how it might appear for some, yes?
Yeah, it was really great. I anticipated today's chat for some time now. I saw it on my calendar, and I was really looking forward to it. But I tell you, it has been more than what I could have expected. You've done a fabulous, fabulous job in sparking in me new ideas and new thoughts, and I'm energized by it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, sharing this experience with friends and with students alike.
Well, thank you so much. I thank you, Dr. John, for being able to go on the journey. I think that we've touched many hearts and souls today, and I think that's really the purpose. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book is Make Your Own Damn Cheese, and in a way, it's a follow-up to Spencer Johnson's classic book, Who Moved My Cheese, which was a book that when I was leaving cardiac surgery and moving into venous surgery, it gave me great strength and great hope, that book. And so Make Your Own Damn Cheese is sort of a sequel, in a sense, bringing it to a different level and understanding the mind. The book can be found at Barnes & Noble. It can be found online at Amazon. There's an audio book that just came out, which you can get through iTunes or Audible, et cetera, that was done by Gildan Media. They did a phenomenal job with it. And my website is ChewbackEducation.com, and people can contact me through ChewbackEducation.com for any questions they might have, or to schedule any speaking engagements, et cetera.
Well, Dr. John, it was such a pleasure to have you with us, and I thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.